From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 13th day of January, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, and Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us. He'll discuss some of those numbers from USDA yesterday at the World Agricultural Outlook Board as it relates to the size of the corn crop in Brazil and what his assessment might be of that crop, first and second crop, and what potential pitfalls still remain there. So we'll take all of that up on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn finished 7.25 cents higher today at $5.24.5. The May at $5.27.75, up 8.75. And new crop December down 4.25 cents, settled at $4.53.25. Soybeans were lower on the day, 14.06 1/4, down 12 in the lead March. May at $14.03.75, a dime lower. And November soybeans at $11.76. That's the new crop. Down 0.5 cent for the day. The bean meal, $8.30 lower at $457.10 a ton. And the bean oil at $41.90, down 43 cents for the day. Hard red winter wheat in the March contract, the lead option up 3.25 at $6.25.75. And the soft red winter wheat for the day finished the nearby contract at $6.60.5, down 4.5 cents for the afternoon. A quick look at what's happening with the livestock side of the sector. Nearby live cattle futures at $112.25, down 22.5 cents. In the February, April down 17.5 at $117.47.5. The feeders were 35 cents lower at $133.57.5. And lean hogs in the February contract down $1.65 at $66.85 for the afternoon. Crude oil futures today currently trading the nearby contract at $53.07 a barrel, down 14 cents. Ethanol futures for the afternoon are now at $1.63 a gallon, 11 cents higher for the day. And the price of diesel fuel at $1.59.08, that's heating oil, is up 0.2 cents. Gasoline on the RBOB at $1.54.5 is down 0.7 cents. Natural gas at $2.73, down 2.3 cents per gallon. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, now joins us to discuss what's been happening in the marketplace. Wow, what a 2 days it has been in Chicago. Part of that, of course, due to the USDA numbers that were released yesterday morning. I think, Jackie, rather than going through the regular stuff to begin with, I want to start with those USDA facts and figures, and maybe you can recap them for me and give me your view of them.
Alrighty. The first report I want to talk about is the quarterly grain stocks, because that by far, Todd, is the most important report in my mind. We came in basically almost steady on beans when it came to the gas. Corn came in 600 million less than the average gas, and wheat came in just slightly less. All of them were reductions. Actually, the corn was lower than what they had last year. And so I think that's pretty interesting. But the thing that I look for in this, Todd, is how much grain is on farm. So right now we have 62% of the corn on farm compared to 62.7 last year. Beans, 43.7 compared to 46.7 last year. And wheat, 28.8 compared to 28.7 last year. So what that says is 30% of the crop is in, of the corn crop, or 38% of the crop is in commercial hands. More than half of the bean crop is in commercial hands, and we usually use that as a rule of thumb as far as support goes in the marketplace. In other words, our expectation is no longer to just plummet. You know, it puts more of a bottom in the marketplace. So when you look at the what caused the big changes, well, they dropped the yield from 175.3, which was the average guess. It was 175.8 last month, to 172 on corn. And on beans, we were 50.7 last month. They went down to 50.2 on beans. And so, you know, it really kicked the market in the pants, because both of those were a great deal less. The 172 was 3.3 bushels less than what the average guess was. So when we looked at the ending stock numbers, we really saw, again, numbers that were lower than the average guesses. Now, you know, we looked at soybeans came in at 140. The average guess was 139, but it was still a drop of 35 million. I remember very clearly that back when we were really tight for beans, we never got below 119 million bushel carryout. So I don't know if we're going to do that again. But when you look at 1.5 billion bushels for corn, that's interesting number when you have as aggressive sales and the demand situation that we're sitting in right at the moment. So the world carryout numbers too all followed suit. Everything went lower. And then we looked at winter wheat acres. We came in at 32 million estimated planted acres for this year. And that is the first time we've been up on planted acres in wheat since 2008, which I thought was extremely interesting. So, you know, wheat is a competitor for corn, so that gives us a little bit of support there too. And then you take South America, and you have they dropped the Argentinian corn by 1.5 million metric tons. They dropped the Argentinian beans by 2 million metric tons. They dropped Brazilian corn just by 1 million metric tons, Todd. And you know that number at 109 that they have is still high compared to what a lot of people down there are saying. CONAB is at 102. Dr. Cordonier is at 102. We'll see. I mean, I know that the USDA has numbers of people on the ground in Brazil, but nobody can agree on anything because they're so far away from each other. And so on beans, they remained at 133. I was floored. I thought sure that we were going to see a reduction in the bean production down in South America. Dr. Cordonier has been at 128 million metric tons for quite a long time. And so these numbers were just enough to really light the market up. And where did the changes come in yield? The major ones were Illinois dropped 3 bushel to the acre compared to last month. Indiana dropped 2 bushel to the acre. Iowa dropped 6 bushels to the acre. Minnesota, 10 bushels to the acre in corn. Those are huge. And that's just the highlights of the big guys. And when it comes to beans, the same type of thing. We actually saw Illinois go from 58 up to 59. So they increased. Indiana stayed the same. Iowa dropped just 1 bushel. And Minnesota dropped 2 bushels. So it was enough to just nudge it. But it was an interesting day, let's just say that.
Tell me about the inverse in the marketplace for corn, particularly for soybeans as well.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, anybody who's been listening for a long time knows that I harp on this all the time, that you have to let the futures tell you what the market is saying. And so for right now, between March corn to December corn, we have 72.5 cents a carry. Now, if it isn't shouting that we want corn now, I don't know what it is. You know, so we have to really be careful on this. When you look at beans, from March beans to November beans, we get $2.325 carry. That, again, the market is telling you the demand is here today. And what it's also saying is, well, at these numbers, we anticipate an increase in acres. Now, corn still is behind in terms of from a ratio standpoint. You know, so in that respect, I think that there could be a little more, there's more movement possible in the corn market, perhaps in the new crop, than there is necessarily in the bean market. But that remains to be seen, and that'll depend very much on all of the outside forces and where the crop comes in down in South America, what the American dollar does. There's just so many factors.
And then you have the Russian wheat situation, Ukraine talking about corn in particular and mm-hmm. not having enough available. All those things are playing into the marketplace.
Oh, yeah. Russia, I mean, they're putting an export duty of $30 per metric ton on wheat starting February the 15th. So they still have some time, you know, to change their mind if they want to. But, you know, we've seen China come in. We did some more selling to unknown overnight last night. They raised China's corn demand today by another 120 million bushels. They dropped their corn output by 160 million bushels, and they upped their bean imports by 110 million bushels today. Those were all adjustments that were made in China. Those are huge numbers. You know, I mean, if you look at 110 million, we're sitting at 140 million bushel carryout. that could, you know, that could literally wipe out the carryout. It's not going to happen, but it could do that. Then you look to South America and you see Brazil, their harvest, it appears, in Mato Grosso, is going to be 15 to 20 days later than normal. Last year, by the end of January, they were 25% harvested. This year, they're going to be lucky if they're even 10% harvested. And so that has another impact that delays the Safrinha corn planting. 50% of the bean acres in Mato Grosso are planted to second crop corn. And it needs to be planted by the third week in February for optimum yield. So that doesn't look like that's probably going to happen. And right now, January weather is really critical, you know, for pod filling down in Brazil. And the weather has been very up and down. So this is going to be interesting to see what they really end up with when it comes to the size of a crop. And now we'll move to Argentina. For the longest time, we didn't have much information on Argentina. Lately, they've been pretty interesting. The farmer had a 72-hour strike, said he's not going to sell anything. So, you know, the government relented, and they're allowing 30,000 metric tons of corn to be shipped daily. And this is really a slap in the face to the Argentinian Minister of Public Works, because last week, this is what he said. For one time, these sectors of the economy need to think about the rest of the Argentines. A good part of these sectors that are going very well need to think about the rest of the country. That's why the government took this action. What is clear is that the government will not move one centimeter. And then they turned around and changed it. So, you know, the question comes down to, and I alluded to this last week, you know, why did the government suddenly take this type of action? And I think that when you look at some of the facts, it doesn't seem that there's a critical shortage of corn right now. Dr. Cordonier also said the same thing. But there will be there is a question, I guess, as to what this next year's crop might be. Maybe they were anticipating a corn shortage in the future due to weather, but I think it's more likely they needed tax dollars. And, you know, agricultural products in South America are the greatest contributor to the tax income. And so we'll see. We'll just see what happens down there. It's crazy.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week. On Commodity Week this week tomorrow.
You bet. You betcha. Looking forward to it.
That's Jackie Vex of Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. She will join us for our Commodity Week program. We'll record that tomorrow afternoon. Our panelists for the program will include Jackie, along with Jim McCormick of AgMarket.net, Mike Zuzulo from GlobalComResearch.com, and Lance Honig from USDA NASS. He's the chief of the crops branch and will help us do a postmortem on the USDA crop production and grain stocks reports released on Tuesday of this week. Up next, a news story from fellow NAFB farm broadcaster Glenn Vagan from the P&W Ag Network out of Washington State provided to us. He says increased coronavirus testing of imported meat and poultry is having a big impact on product bound from the United States to China. Since the summer of 2020, following outbreaks at wholesale food markets, China has been swab testing imported meat, often focusing on the packaging. At first, the test only occurred at the ports and on a sample basis, but as the U.S. Meat Export Federation's Joel Haggard explains, China has now implemented new rules that all meat and poultry be tested again at inland cold storage locations and distribution centers before moving on to end users.
Following more outbreaks among port and airport workers, China then mandated that all imported meat and poultry not only had to be COVID tested, but had to undergo a disinfection procedure also to be conducted at approved inland warehouses. China has also begun to layer on a new phone app-based traceability system requiring any party handling imported meat and poultry to scan information about the product's upstream and downstream movements.
And how has all of this COVID testing and disinfection impacted the market? Well, Haggard says the effects have really been more pronounced over the past couple of weeks.
There have been some slowdowns in product clearance at ports as product looks to find approved warehouses where it can be disinfected. And then there's been a slowdown in the movement of products as wholesalers need to get their COVID test and disinfection certificates. and we are hearing of some consumer pushback on imported meat and poultry.
Haggard added these developments are coming at an inopportune time since this is the peak meat purchasing and consumption season in China leading up to the February 12th Lunar New Year. The Meat Export Federation's Haggard says he's also confident that the hiccups are only temporary. On this Wednesday, let's check the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, I hope you're going to enjoy the warm weather we're going to have for the next couple of days because we got some cold air coming, too.
So. Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. I will remind you, though, that mostly I enjoyed the sunshine that we had yesterday and some of the sunshine we'll have today. It was a long time of gray skies in there. However, given yesterday's USDA reports, this morning's numbers that came out from CONAB, which disagree on the size of the corn crop for the whole of the year, so first and second crop. I'm wondering what you can tell us a little bit about corn in South America, in particular the first crop. I think CONAB today said there would be a 6.9% decrease in the total crop production for corn for the whole year, first and second crop corn in Brazil for this growing season. USDA at 109 million metric tons. Can you explain to me what you think that crop looks like from your perspective?
Yeah, from a Brazil perspective, we did a lot of damage to that first crop. There was losses from coming out of the starting gate. Now, the crop is a lot smaller than it has been in past years, so it probably isn't going to have a huge impact all by itself. But with that said, though, the delay in precipitation early on really did have a negative impact on that crop, a lot more than the soybeans. And, you know, the plant itself is just a little bit different, and it handles that kind of situation differently. And, you know, just like here at home, if we get off on the wrong foot for corn, we usually lose some yield. And I think that certainly has been the case. And my biggest concern for their corn crop overall is this delay in getting that safrinha crop in the ground. The soybean harvest is really not going to get going very, very well until we get into the very last part of January and into the first half to two-thirds of February. And what I understand is that if they plant that safrinha corn anytime after the third week in February, it loses yield right off the bat. Forget what kind of weather they're going to have. So that raises a lot of concern right away, because I think there's going to be maybe a third to a half of that crop that will be planted that late easily. And the other part of my concern is that La Nina is going to start weakening rather steadily. And so we're going to lose that influence. And the potential for us to have an extended rainy season is going diminishing as La Nina diminishes. So I think that there is potential for us to run out of moisture sometime in April is fairly good. And if we don't get the crop in the ground until the 1st of March, we're going to have some issues. So I am concerned about the numbers there. And I have to say that I side with CONAB a whole lot more than the USDA.
Well, it can't be too much clearer than that. So let's talk about what the near term looks like for soybeans that are still in varying degrees of their growing season, some of the very earliest ones, I think, about to be harvested, maybe some already harvested, and then others kind of midstream. What do you see across the board again?
Yeah.
So we're
yeah, absolutely. That early crop, you're right. It's at this point finishing up, and so the damage is done. And it's really that early crop that is going to have the biggest negative impact, if you will, because the weather has been somewhat somewhat erratic. Now, the rains got better in December, as we expected, and they've been fairly good here so far this month. So those early seeded crops are probably, you know, they're off by a bit, but it's not a big disaster necessarily. And what's good is that the late planted crop has had a little more consistency in the rainfall. And the forecast here is for rain to continue to occur much more routinely as we go forward through the balance of this month. So the late planted crops that are just now moving into the pod filling stage will probably have a much better environment to work with, and we'll probably see those yields turn around a little bit. So I would think that the late soybean crop will do a whole lot better. And the weather coming up, we're even going to see some timely rain in Rio Grande do Sul. And you know, when La Nina events, it's Rio Grande that usually has the biggest problem with moisture shortages. Sometimes it goes all the way up into Paraná and to Paraguay, but it's always Rio Grande. Well, so far, Rio Grande's had some issues, but it hasn't been nearly as dry as we've seen in some other La Nina events. And so there's potential there they might do a little better. Outside of Rio Grande do Sul, though, there is still some concern about some of the minor production areas in the northeast. And in my opinion, Sao Paulo has been not doing real well here recently. Another area that was recently relieved of dryness was Goiás. Goiás was quite dry for quite a while, but just this past week we caught up real nicely there, and we're going to see more rain coming up. The bottom line is over the next 2 weeks, we should see a good distribution of rain and a favorable environment for this crop.
And then turn your attention to the United States. You suggested things were changing, especially in the northern tiers of the nation. What do you see?
Yeah, well, first of all, a little editorial comment. I just want to, for those who have heard about the stratospheric warming taking place and the vortex, polar vortex commentary, I just want to point out a couple of things. You know, it's only been in recent years that the media has caught on to the polar vortex, and it does have a tendency to overplay that issue. And I know there was all kinds of reports last week about the polar vortex coming up and how the end of the world was coming because we're all going to die from freezing to death. And the reality of that is not quite that extreme. And I just wanted to make sure that everyone's aware of that. We are going to turn cooler in late January and February, and we may have some nasty cold days, but this isn't going to be epic stuff. Our atmosphere is not going to be capable of producing that kind of environment. So we're going to have some winter weather for a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and then things will straighten out. What we've got coming up here near term here is a first round of cooling, but we've been so warm across North America here recently that the cool off is only going to bring us closer to normal, and we still aren't going to be below average on temperatures. But we are going to see a blizzard evolve in parts of Minnesota and the eastern Dakotas tomorrow night into Friday morning because of very strong winds and some snow that's going to fall. We'll see 2 to 6 and some local 8-inch amounts in Minnesota in particular, maybe just 1 to 3 inches in eastern Dakotas. But the winds are going to howl from Saskatchewan all the way down to Kansas at speeds of 30 to 50 miles an hour. Those are gusts. And we'll probably even see some higher gusts in the northern parts of that region.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today. And if you can send some more sunshine, that would be great.
Well, the next 24 hours in your neighborhood is going to be just wonderful.
Thank you. That's Truth Learner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. The closing market report came to you from Illinois Public Media.